Welcome to KPTZ's Nature Now, a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of kptz.org.
Hello, and welcome to Nature Now. I'm Nan Evans. And last week, I went with Susie Learned with Friends of Chimicon Creek and Carrie Clendaniel with the Jefferson Land Trust out to the Jefferson Land Trust Illihi Preserve along Chimicon Creek to watch and to learn more about the returning Hood Canal summer chum. So the core of today's program is actually a field recording from that trip. So we'll get to that in a minute, but first, as always, we'll start with a mystery sound, and then later on in the program, we'll let you know what it is. So here is just a little hint. I was trying to come up with a mystery sound for this week when I looked out the living room window and saw this critter. Moving on to observations and news. Our sound engineer extraordinaire, Charlie Flashman, is helping me share news, observations, and upcoming events.
Cliff Mass's weather blog has good news. The overall winter air quality in the Puget Sound region has significantly improved over the past several decades. This is especially true for the concentration of tiny particles that can get lodged deep in our lungs. The improvements largely come from the decrease in the amount of wood burning and the improvements in the design of wood stoves.
That's a pitch for all of you who burn wood to get updated wood stoves with catalytic converters, etc. Those of you who heard last week's Nature Now program may remember that the mystery sound was the call of the Harlequin duck. I was excited this week to see several of these remarkable birds during my walks along North Beach. Oh, and another bird observation, Artemis Kelt, on the Admiralty Audubon sighting webpage, reported seeing a group of four dowitchers at Katai Lagoon last week.
Here's something else to check out. The Washington State University Extension Service has just published a booklet on drought-tolerant landscaping for Washington State. This publication is hot off the press and filled with information you need to get started on water conservation, plant selection and management, soils, hardscaping, efficient irrigation, and more.
The Skagit Valley Herald has a story about a local scientist who, after many, many hours of observing from the bluffs overlooking Burroughs Pass near Anacortes, can uniquely identify about 35 individual harbor porpoises from their markings. Much the same technique is being used on the harbor porpoises that helped researchers learn so much about our resident orcas.
On the subject of orcas, recent photos of the newest baby born in September reveal that L-122 is a boy. This means four of the five calves born in the past 10 months are male, with J50 being the only female. This youngest calf remains unnamed. The four others received official names after online voting conducted by the Whale Museum in Friday Harbor.
As I mentioned a few minutes ago, this week's interview and discussion is actually a field trip with Susie Learned and Carrie Clendaniel. Now, just a few quick notes before we hear that field recording. Chum salmon are also called dog salmon or sometimes keta salmon. Those are alternate names for the same fish. The name chum actually comes from the Chinook jargon term, and I'll pronounce it probably badly, sum, meaning spotted or marked. And then the name keta, which is used in its scientific species name, comes from a native language of eastern Siberia. We also, in the field recording, talk a little bit about coho or silver salmon, different species. And we mention reds. And those are the spawning nests built by female salmon in the gravel stream bed of freshwater streams in which they lay their eggs, and then the males come along and fertilize them. Hi, this is Nan Evans, and I'm out at the Jefferson Land Trust Illihi Preserve. It's a preserve that
protects a key part of Chimicum Creek. It's open to the public. You get here off of Prospect Road by turning south on Creek View and just going to the end. There's a little parking lot and a little shelter and then trails down to the creek. I'm here with my friend Susie Learned, and Susie lives near the mouth of the Chimicum Creek. So, hi, Susie.
Hi, Nan. Nice to be here with you today.
Yeah, and it's a lovely, lovely morning. So, Susie, well, tell me about how long you have been familiar with Chimicum Creek.
Well, the first time I saw Chimicum Creek was 1970.
Wow.
It is actually an area that has played an important role in my husband's family because the property that we live on, his family has owned over 100 years.
Wow.
So I know his father and his cousin used to swim in the creek. So it was very important to the family.
Oh, interesting. Well, let's walk down the path now. I can hear there are a couple of classes out here, so we hear kid noises as they're looking at the salmon too. But let's walk down the path down to the creek.
You know, it's so beautiful walking. We're walking down to the creek right now. And the light, this autumn northwest light, is so beautiful. And walking in the trees, and soon we should hear the fish splashing.
I can just now hear some of the water. Tell me when you can start to smell them.
Okay.
This is another iconic Northwest experience.
Yes.
Oh, I can see one. I can see it splashing.
Yes, I can hear them. Yes, I can see it. Well, yes, I'm starting to get the smell.
Yep. And I can see two big ones right down there.
Yes. Me too.
Okay, we're up above the creek a little bit, looking down on it, and you can see the salmon sort of swirling around in the ponded parts of this creek. Let's go further down. Oh, I can smell it now too. Yes, there it is. And it's not a bad smell. It's just a smell of fish. So let's count fish for a minute. I see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 dorsal fins. I hear another one over there. There's none in this. Oh, yes, there is. Look, right out there in the middle of the channel, there's one. You can see his or her back fin.
Yeah. Oh, yes. And then
there's another. And there's another one. Oh, look. And there's three right here.
I know. There's one, two, three, four, where they're kind of wiggling back and forth.
Mm-hmm. But not many yet.
Yeah.
Splash.
And the reason it's just so delightfully smelling, not really, but anyway, what we smell, we have a dead fish right below us.
And one of the things that fascinates me now about these dead fish is that they'll become food for animals that'll drag them off into the woods, and the nutrients in the fish will then enter the forest ecosystem.
Yes.
And yes, I hadn't appreciated how important that was to get the nutrients spread throughout the whole system.
Sometimes it's hard to see these dead fish, but then when you think about the cycle of life, it eases one's mind.
Yeah, I mean, it is part of the cycle.
It is.
It's a sort of fascinating life cycle for the salmon, and these are chum.
And, you know, seeing the fish jump on the bay at the mouth of the creek is very beautiful and wonderful, but I'm telling you, when you can actually come up the creek in an intimate spot on the creek and look into it and see these fish, it seems like a miracle. It's mm-hmm. just wonderful.
You know, it does seem like a miracle to me, too. It's easy to read about them, celebrate the return, but to actually be down here and actually see them, watch their behavior as they sort of clean out little gravel places to lay their eggs, watch the males, pay attention. And some of them are still, I think, working their way upstream.
Yes, I think so.
This pair right here started out over there, and now they're quietly in front of us.
It's a really wonderful experience.
So let's go walk along the stream a little bit. There's a couple of spots along here that you can watch. Oh, look at that one. Whoa.
He's way out of the water.
Yeah, he's like at least a third, if not a half, out of the water. But he got to his deeper spot.
Oh, look, there are several fish.
I can see maybe at least six in that little spot. And one of them particularly has started its body to deteriorate and now in the fresh water.
Yes, you can see that. The light.
Mm-hmm. The sort of
body part
white
on the top.
Patch.
Yes, the white patch. The fish that was out of the water quite a bit, I'm watching it go. It's going upstream more and more.
There it
and
is
he's
there.
Still, yeah, he still has quite a bit of his body out of the water. Maybe 25% of his body's now out of the water. Oh, and there's another fish close to him.
It's interesting. The more you look, as is always the case, the more you look, the more you see.
Yes.
Because that big one sort of circled around, and there are at least three over there in that pool.
There are four. I see four.
Okay. Of course, all the splashing we're hearing is not rock riffles. Those are salmon riffles as they're pushing their way upstream. Wow.
Well,
one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten, at least.
Quite a few.
Oh, look at this one.
Oh, my gosh. He's half out of the water.
At least half out of the water. Now he's gone back under a little bit,
yes.
But you could really see. He's a beautiful fish.
Wow. Oh.
So we've just been joined by Carrie Clendaniel of the Jefferson Land Trust. Carrie, I'm so glad you could join us out here.
I'm so glad we're all out here during this salmon spawning season.
Actually, we're all out here. There's
literally everyone.
It's almost hard to find a place to park on the parking lot because there are kids and adults all down to see the salmon. So Susie and I have been talking a bit about the Illihee. Give us a little bit of history from the Land Trust perspective, first about this property.
Sure. Well, Illihee Preserve is about 5 acres here on the lower stretch of Chimicum Creek, which is spawning grounds for the ESA-listed Hood Canal summer chum.
ESA, Endangered Species Act.
Endangered Species Act. Yes, and the coho also passed through here as well on their way farther upstream.
Mm-hmm.
So in just a few weeks, we'll be able to see both species side by side if we're lucky.
Okay, so you don't think the coho have started yet?
I haven't heard that they have started yet.
So this is all the chum?
These are all chum so far.
Okay.
But Illihee Preserve is special for a number of reasons. The first thing that brought it to the Land Trust's attention is it's about 5 acres that covers both sides of the creek. And it was actually almost the last remaining piece in a whole stretch of protected properties that lead from upstream of here down to the mouth of the creek. And it was really keystone in making that continuous line of protected, rich riparian habit that the Hood Canal summer chum in particular need to be able to spawn and survive.
How long has it been in Land Trust ownership?
This was acquired by the Land Trust primarily for salmon habitat purposes in March of 2012.
So not very long.
Not very long. It had been a desirable piece for a long time before that, and we were very lucky that the previous landowner also greatly valued this place for its beauty and its salmon and its educational and outreach opportunities, and he was able to work with us while we pursued state salmon habitat recovery grant funding and also county conservation futures grant funding.
So what's been done to restore some of the riparian areas here? What kind of work are you doing down in here?
A lot of the work we're doing this piece is in very good shape. As you can see, we've got this multi-age canopy. There's mature trees reaching out over the creek. There's complexity. There's natural wood. There's gravel. Mm-hmm. Lots of native vegetation here to shade the water. And so this is already in good shape. We've improved upon it somewhat by doing some native plantings a little bit higher up off the creek.
Yeah, I saw some...
There's a wildlife planting area you can see from the informational sign and right here near the creek. And that was actually designed to bring in a little bit more diversity of terrestrial and avian animals and insects. So that provides some forage for deer and birds and insects up there. A mix of flowering and fruiting plants that will do well. And then there's an old road grade that the previous owner had put in to get all the way down to the creek. And we are slowly letting that renaturalize by having planted some conifers and shrubs along the edge. It'll probably stay open for walking for a long time, but it's no longer a vehicle access road. We also put in this pedestrian dirt trail that leads from the parking area down to the creek. Specifically because this is one of the only places that is somewhat easily accessible to get to see the spawning salmon in Lower Chimicum Creek.
So how much longer this season do you think the chum are going to be here?
Until late October.
Late October, so...
Potentially early November, but...
September, late October, early November, that's the time frame?
Mid-September to late October is really the bulk of it.
And Susie and I were speculating a bit, but can you talk a bit about their behavior? And are they actually making reds in here when we see them in some of the quiet spots? I mean, here, this channel, they seem to be moving through because it's pretty fast. But
at this viewing spot, I haven't seen a whole lot of reds. Downstream from here, there's quite a bit of reds, but where you see right where the trail comes out, there's this large area with some deep pools and some fast moving water, and the fish are really kicking their tails. They're kicking their tails to get over the fast moving water into this nice deep pool near the log jam, and they're going to rest in that deep pool for just a couple of minutes, get their strength back, and then they're going to jump over this next hurdle.
There. Yeah,
exactly. So these fish that are hanging out everywhere in the quiet places where it's shaded, where it's deeper, they're waiting to move upstream. And where you see them kicking their tails really quickly in this area, they're getting to a calmer spot where they can rest.
So I know that the chum spawn lower in the streams than, for example, the coho. Give me an idea of their spawning ground here in the Chimicum.
They spawn in the lower 2 miles.
Lower 2 miles. So we're maybe mile one-ish here?
We're a bit over river mile one.
River mile one.
It's the summer chum habitat is this lowest stretch. It's also where people tend to do the most development is in the lower reaches of the creeks closest to the ocean. And so we, with this particular species, have an extra amount of competing interest.
A lot of us have read stories of the recovery, but can you sort of briefly talk about the salmon recovery? Because it hasn't been this way.
No. As you may know, in the 1980s, there was a culvert underneath Irondale Road, where the bridge is now, near 7th. Mm-hmm. And that culvert blew out 1 year during spawning season. And it just completely annihilated the fish stock. Mm-hmm.
Just because they couldn't get through.
They couldn't get through. It covered their spawning ground. Mm-hmm. There wasn't suitable habitat to lay eggs. This was on top of the fish being in serious decline due to the type of development we were doing at the time, taking away some of the forest from the creeks, straightening them out. Then in the mid-1990s, a group of community members got together. It was almost a precursor to the North Olympic Salmon Coalition. And they started a breeding program where they took fish eggs from the next closest Hood Canal summer chum stock and they incubated the eggs in the waters of Chimicum Creek so that the fish would hatch and know to return here to repopulate the stream.
Oh, that's interesting. So
the fish that we see here today are actually not the ancient strain that lived in this particular creek. That strain was wiped out.
But a strain that lived in a nearby creek that was then acclimated to this creek.
From Salmon Creek.
Do you have any numbers about the number of fish that come up, or number of chum that come up?
Mm-hmm. In recent years, it's been as high as just over 3,000 estimated.
Wow.
Which is a really
That's great.
Cool. Average, we're looking at more of 1,200 to 1,500, and it gets as low as below 1,000.
Mm-hmm. It's an amazing community story.
It is.
An amazingly successful community story, too.
Actually, one of the most successful salmon habitat restoration projects in the country.
Really?
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. That's wonderful.
So what questions am I not asking that I should be asking?
I think one thing that is scary but important to think about is that we are looking at pretty significant climate change in the next decade. Whatever you want to call it, we are getting predictions that storms might be greater, heat might be greater. There's just going to be some more extremes.
And we know there'll be changes in the stream flows and the time they peak and...
Exactly.
In addition to whatever temperature they might reach, but...
And so for the Hood Canal summer chum, whose spawning ground is already so reduced by being in the lower reaches, going at a season when the water is lowest, having the highest development pressure for the same grounds, we're going to have to think about how they're able to adapt to potentially lower water or higher water.
Knowing that things are going to change... But not knowing exactly how, from a restoration perspective, what do you do to increase the probabilities that the fish will continue to flourish?
Well, we have one advantage here in a riparian zone in that this particular environment is already somewhat buffered as compared to an uplands area. It stays warmer in the winter, it stays cooler in the summer. So if we're able to maintain a healthy stream bank with this forest cover, this shade, this variety of vegetation that attracts insects, that attracts other animals, hopefully this environment is going to be able to kind of buffer some of those extreme changes.
So it's keep doing what you're doing so well here.
That's what and expand.
And expand, right.
But yes, make sure that we're keeping...
Do more of what you're doing so well, yes.
Not just us, the North Olympic Salmon Coalition, the Conservation District, the Department of Fish and Wildlife, the county.
Yeah, that's the earlier, the comment about it being a real community effort. It's the organization and the many organizations, nonprofits, government, and the people in the community who... And this is just, it's astounding to me to see this. Thanks, the two of you. This will be fun.
This will be great.
Yeah. Thank you. This is so cool.
Let's hear that mystery sound again. That nasal yank, yank, yank was the call of the red-breasted nuthatch. Red-breasted nuthatches are blue-gray birds with strongly patterned heads. A black cap and stripe through the eye, and a white stripe over the eye. The underparts are a rich, rusty cinnamon. Look for them in coniferous woods and in the mountains. So here's one last cool fact about red-breasted nuthatches. They collect resin globules from the coniferous trees, and then using their bills or a small piece of bark as an applicator, they plaster the resin around the entrance of the nest hole. The male puts the resin primarily around the outside of the hole, while the female puts it around the inside. Scientists speculate that the resin may be used to help keep out predators or competitors. Then the nuthatch, to avoid getting trapped in their own resin, dive directly through the hole into their nest.
And here are this week's upcoming events. On Sunday, October 11th, from 9 a.m. to noon, join the Admiralty Audubon for a work party at Katai Lagoon. The project for the day will be to plant about 200 native plants, pull Scott's broom, and generally pick up stuff around the nature park. Check the Admiralty Audubon website for more details.
And join the fun at the Dungeness Crab Festival in Port Angeles this coming weekend, October 9th through the 11th. The festival celebrates not only the aquaculture, agriculture, and maritime traditions of our breathtaking Olympic Peninsula, but it brings food, art, music, Native American activities, and children's activities into one spectacular three-day event.
The Port Townsend Marine Science Center is sponsoring a lecture Sunday, October 11th at 3 p.m. on the use of unmanned aircraft to conduct research on orca abundance and demographics, to study individual size, growth, and body condition, and to analyze movement patterns. The program will be at the Fort Worden Commons. Check the PTMSC website for details.
Then on the morning of Friday, October 16th, at 9:30 a.m., join the folks from the Native Plant Society for a cross-Quimper Peninsula exploration from Cappy's Trails to the Larry Scott Trail. They plan to meander along public trails from the Winona Wetlands, then along the Larry Scott Trail, and then finally to end at the Boat Haven. Check the Native Plant Society website for more details. Now I have one last thing. Nature Now is looking for curious members of our community to help produce and host our radio programs. The job is fun and rewarding. You work with other great volunteers at this truly amazing radio station and have the opportunity to learn fascinating things about the natural world around us. If you're interested, contact me, Nan Evans, at naturenow@kptz.org. That's one word, naturenow@kptz.org. That's it for this episode of Nature Now. We hope you have enjoyed our program of authentic and eclectic news of the natural community where we live. We do welcome any comments or observations. Just email us at naturenow@kptz.org. Nature Now airs at noon on Wednesdays with repeats here on KPTZ on Thursdays at 5 o'clock p.m. and Saturdays at 11:30 a.m. Recent podcasts are also available on the KPTZ website.
Nature Now is produced by Nan Evans and edited by Charlie Fleischman.
Closing music is Out in the Woods, performed by Leftover Salmon.